Welcome to Reynolds Hot Box, a podcast about local media and the future of media from Reynolds Media Lab. I'm Temilo Lua Drujae. I have Ezekiel Corin here with me, a doctor, an adjunct professor here at the Reynolds School of Journalism, the man with the great hairs, the stylish great hairs. How you doing?
Great. How are you, Tommy?
I'm doing okay. So we're going to start off the podcast with an elevator pitch segment. This is the Reynolds Hot Box. We do things different. And no, it's not a metaphorical elevator pitch segment. I will literally take you to the elevator and have you explain the heart of, you know, your research, your paper, technologically bridging. Yeah, that's an interesting name. That's an interesting name. So you're just going to give our audience a quick summary, elevator up, elevator down, and then that's it. That's a real elevator pitch.
Okay, so let's see. We could begin by telling everybody, you know, I am a second-time emigre.
No. This is happening in the actual elevator. But yeah, before we go, part of this story has been shaped a lot by, you know, personal, how he's personally, you know, gone through the world. And so I really do think that it's an interesting paper we're going to dissect, and you're about to hear what the paper is about. So, we're about to leave the podcasting studio right now. Ezekiel is hella shocked that I'm dragging him all the way to the elevator to do this.
Yeah, I thought it was something metaphorical.
This is the way John D. Rockefeller did it, okay? Yeah. You actually went through the elevator.
Hey, let's do it.
And then you pitched. And so, I'm going to ask again, you know, a quick summary of your paper. What is it?
Well, as I was saying, you know, it is truly an autoethnographic paper. You see, an autoethnography is basically using the tools of ethnography to tell your own story. And it's based on certain questionings that we have within the social sciences in terms of the objectivity that we can have as observers. So based on that, I constructed this narrative retelling my own story of emigration and that of my daughter.
And technology and communication is the focus of your story.
Indeed.
And I wonder, how did that come about?
Well, as a matter of fact, it's anecdotal. You know, when we moved here to the States, my daughter was 5 years old. So we wanted to keep in touch with our family back in Venezuela. And the best way we found to do so was through Skype. And, you know, young kids, they have this great ability of telling things as they are. So she would just bang on the screen, and it was not the same thing for her. And that got me thinking about how I related to my grandparents back when I was a kid.
And now we're at the top floor. We're going to go down. Let's hope Ezekiel is done with this by the time we hit down.
Oh, certainly. I mean, and from there, you know, I started recounting my own story of how it had been back in the late 70s and early 80s, and looking at the technological differences between one and the other, and understanding how technology does serve to bridge these gaps.
But it's also more than just a story about technology and communication, though.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It is much more than about technology and communication. It is really a story about human relations, if you will.
Yeah, it is. And I'm going to be honest with you, it was a certain shot. I enjoyed it a lot. And usually research papers go like 4T pages, but this one was like 4 pages. It was wonderful. I really, really vibed with it. Well, we're back now in the podcast in the studio. We've learned a little bit about the paper. We figure, you know, it's an ethnography. We're learning basically about Ezekiel's life and what that means for technology and communication and how we interact with the people around us. So, definitely enjoyed the elevator pitch. Ezekiel was proper surprised, which is that's the funnest part of the elevator pitch. Everybody comes in and they had a surprise. Of course, you're still in the Reynolds Hot Box, a local podcast about local media and the future of media and journalism. I'm Tammy Droja. I'm still here with Ezekiel Corin. And now that you know it's the story of Ezekiel's life, I want to say, what was the hardest part of writing that for you?
Well, one of the hardest things of writing out ethnography, although the technique itself seems rather simple, and, you know, as you said before, definitely it makes for a much easier reading than a traditional research paper. The biggest challenge is that everything that's written there are part of lived experiences. And part of putting it out there, well, it's hard. It's hard because some things, you know, for example, one of the topics I talk about in that paper is this idea of breakage with family. I emigrated from Argentina when I was 1 year old. And then later to get my doctorate when I was around, 40, I believe.
One of the lines I liked from the ethnography, from this research paper, you said, "Playing truco and drinking mate," I hope you pronounce that correctly.
Perfect.
As if written by Borges, "our Sundays reproduce an Argentina that is experienced and lived, dreamed and feared, normative and nurturing." That is like poetic, but also I want to know what he means.
I mean, you know, growing up as an Argentinian in Venezuela, many times my parents would host or we'd go to some other Argentinian family's home. And literally, that's what we did on Sunday afternoons. We'd play truco and we'd drink mate. And at the same time, it became a sort of small Argentina, if you will. An Argentina that was not really the country, but it was a country in the sense that was all I knew of Argentina. Back then, you have to keep in mind, you know, there was a military dictatorship in Argentina. Uh-huh. So the possibility of going back was kind of hard, very much like it is hard nowadays for us to go back to Venezuela because of the political conditions. So
if I understand that clearly, it felt like you were saying y'all had managed to keep a pocket of Argentina for yourselves, that it was both a dream, but also there was the fear of never being able to go back?
Yeah, basically. And, you know, not really knowing your country. I remember, you know, later on in life when I actually did go to Argentina, I was like 16. And one of the funny things is they would ask me where I was from. If you hear me speaking in Spanish, I have an Argentinian accent. And for me, I was Argentinian. I mean, all my life,
yeah,
you know, that was my country. I rooted for it in soccer. I felt Argentinian.
Well, they didn't know how to play soccer, so I'm not going to give you a pass on that one.
They still do. Okay, we can discuss that. We can discuss that later, but we still do.
Another thing I think I took away from there was you saying, you know, you could enjoy the letters without the ticking clock of international direct dialing. And it got me thinking, is that a way of saying basically letters are better than what we have now in terms of creating a richer experience with communicating with those far away from us? Okay. In the diaspora, in this case. We should mention that this is a research paper about the diaspora, which I've managed to skip. But yeah, is because that's how I read that.
You know, there is, and I won't deny, I am very nostalgic of material things, and particularly in terms of communication. You know, when you end a phone call, you really have nothing to hold on to rather than just the words that you remembered somebody said. If it's a video Skype call or
the same thing.
It's the same thing. Now, I remember, you know, growing up and then looking at my grandfather's letters years after he had written them, and there was something there, and I could see it even in the way his hand shook as he was writing them. There is some meaning there that is not present in digital technology.
But then the counterpoint to that is that digital technologies can literally recreate the person as closely as possible in your living room with the touch of a button. Is that something maybe that makes it the experience of the diaspora today different than what it was maybe years ago? And how? How would you say it makes it different?
Well, certainly. And, you know, we were talking about it in the elevator pitch. Somehow this all stemmed from my daughter's refusal to talk to her grandparents over video chats. You know, she would touch the screen. She was 5 years old. She would touch the screen and she would say, you know, it's not the same thing. They're not here. As a matter of fact, you know, I could hold on to my grandfather's letters. If there was some physical token that they had sent, I could hold on to that. Instead, with this, I would actually say it's farther away.
Yeah, I was going to say that. The closer we try to approximate, the farther away we get. I think that I do agree there is that with letters, you didn't have the you know, illusion that they were there with you right then, that moment.
And definitely, you don't have the immediacy.
Yes, this was. It felt a letter felt more like a gift than it did, you know, communication. It's like you took your time out, you wrote this, you send this gift to this person, they receive it, they read it. Obviously, they do get updated and everything, but video calls and phone calls and text feel strictly like communication and very transient communication, which is a word you use as well, in that the moment you turn off the phone, the moment you lock the screen, they're gone. Whatever, you probably forgotten whatever text they just sent you or whatever image of them you just had. And that kind of changes, you know, the way you interact with them. It kind of changes the way you collect your memories about them, I would say, right?
Yes, absolutely. And one of the interesting things, you know, and I mentioned that in the paper, later on in life, around 2002, my parents' house burned down. And with that, the entire collection of
letters,
my grandfather's letters.
Yeah, and you described that very poetically painful.
It was painful, you see, because that was part of my physical history. And that moment, that fire did not only destroy what had happened, you know, what was there then, but it destroyed also that connection, that physical connection that I had with my grandparents.
Reynolds Hotbox Podcast. You're still on it. It's a local podcast about local media and future journalism. I'm still your host, Tami Loluwadrojai. I'm still here with Dr. Ezekiel Coring. And I'm going to play an audio from a podcast for the diaspora. It's in Spanish. I've been trying to get a podcast in Spanish. So the audio is called Diseño y Diaspora. I'm guessing that means design and diaspora.
That's correct.
And so I'm going to play an episode about Argentina, actually. And I barely understand what's going on here, but I wanted this to be as true to the experience as possible. Entonces dejé esta entrevista en el cajón y me puse a investigar a qué otros podía entrevistar sobre el mismo tema para crear una serie. Esta serie se llama Diseño Feminista. Le hubiera puesto a esta serie Diseño con Perspectiva de Género, pero me pareció más atractivo llamarla Diseño Feminista. En todo caso, es una serie de entrevistas a diseñadores que no se toman el tema del género a la ligera, sino que por varias razones deciden tomarlo como el tema central en su investigación o en su práctica como diseñadores. So you're just going to summarize, you know, what's been said for us and also, you know, let me know your thoughts on it.
Certainly. It's a podcast about feminist design and the influence of gender in design, basically.
And so far, what do you think? Because I know that's something that definitely interests you.
Yes. You know, for me, and again, this comes back to both my lived experiences and my scholarly work. Basically, what we're talking about are relations of power. And once you boil it down to relations of power, it really becomes interesting to see how certain populations or certain segments of the population are marginalized and how the in-groups handle the relation with the out-groups.
You're still on Reynolds Hotbox Podcast, a local podcast about local media and the future of journalism. I'm Tami Drojae. I still have here with me Ezekiel Corin. I want to say we've got some questions for you from a mailbag, real questions from social media. And we're going to need to answer some of them.
Certainly.
Okay, this is hilarious. At Baby Yoda is my dad asks, how similar do you think the Latinx diasporic experience is to Europeans living in America?
To Europeans living in America today or?
Yeah, today.
Well, definitely there's a difference, you know, and we can talk about diaspora. Because European diaspora happened also during the earlier part of the 20th century. So when we look at at that diaspora, that European diaspora, it is rather similar, you know, obviously with differences in terms of technology, which was another part of that paper that we talked about. But really the sensation of not being able to call yourself from one place, but rather being in this liminal space where you're not... you're no longer from your country of origin, and you're not really part of the one you're at. That sense of not really knowing and having to negotiate your role in society, it's extremely similar. Of course, you know, back then, you also had a lot of political, let's say, pushback against that immigration, very much like you have nowadays against Latino immigration.
So if I'm going to try to, you know, take away something from that, is that, you know, the experiences are similar, but the timelines for development are maybe different. And so what you're seeing now may be something you've seen with the European diasporic experience maybe 20 years ago, and maybe 20 years from now, you're seeing something different with a Latinx diasporic experience.
Well, I would say it's longer than 20 years, but yes, definitely. You know, processes are somewhat relatable. Again, now there are differences, important differences, particularly when we talk about emigration from Latin America. And it has to do with the region's history with the United States. So there are differences
there. Second question at Funke AY asks, what's the one thing you wish you had from back home? One thing. Just one thing only.
Just one thing.
Yeah.
My family.
Oh, that's really sweet. It's not a thing, but I'll take it.
Well, family is, as such, is a thing.
Fair enough.
The people.
Fair enough. At underscore, Latinx socialist asks, how much did those political climates which you were in shape your current experience beyond forcing you to move?
Oh, wow. A lot, I would say. You know, one of the things, you know, and in both cases, the reason why we moved beyond politics itself was also because there were authoritarian governments. And once you live within an authoritarian society, really the possibilities that you have to develop yourself intellectually, personally, you know, in any sense, are extremely limited. And that was what would really resonated with us in terms of making the decision of leaving Venezuela. And it's what resonated with my parents when they had to leave Argentina.
And I wonder, you know, how does that stick with you even now? Like, where do you find it showing up? Those things, you know, you had to deal with then.
Well, one of the things is you become much more aware of certain proto-authoritarian behaviors. And obviously enough, they scare you. You know, there's a saying in Venezuela, el picado de culebra brinca cuando el monte suena. Once the snake bites you, then you jump up as soon as the grass
bristles.
And pretty much it's like that.
Okay, that does sound interesting. You're still on the Reynolds Hot Box, a podcast about local media and the future of journalism. I'm a journalist student, so I do care about the future of journalism. Mm-hmm. That's how I'm going to make money. I'm Tami Drojae. I'm still here with Dr. Ezekiel Quaring. And our next segment is, are you smarter than a millennial? And the goal is to ask questions that we expect a millennial to be able to answer, and you get to answer them. I have taken the liberty of making the questions related to your paper. All right, first question.
Now, one question. Why are we taking it out on millennials?
Because they have the coolest name. All right, first question. The diasporic millennial has lived through technological shifts in the primary modes of information and communication. Where do you think they potentially started from? First one, someone comes from abroad to visit, Facebook, handwritten letters, or phone calls?
Let me see. I'd have to go with Facebook. It started in 2007. So I'm going to go with Facebook.
No, that is the wrong answer.
Man, look at me.
The correct answer is someone comes from abroad to visit. For a lot of people, way back, you know, 1994, 1998 already, that was the main way. Because letters abroad are a lot harder, you know, than letters within the country, within the continent. Someone comes from abroad and they tell you what's happening. You know, they sit with your mother. Your mother has like an entire chat with them the whole night, or your father has an entire chat with them the whole night. And that's how you know what's happening. All right, second question. If a millennial were moving abroad today, what's one thing they would not leave behind? One thing they would not leave behind. Don't worry, I'm not going to say phone. So option A, clothes. Option B, spices. Option C, dinnerware. Option D, books.
I'm tempted to say books, but I'm going to have to go with clothes.
That is also the wrong answer. The right answer is spices. You can buy clothes anywhere.
You can buy spices anywhere.
No, you can't get the right spices anywhere.
Yes, you can. Trust me. I cook a lot.
I'm telling you this as someone who doesn't cook at all. So I have it a good authority that spices are just made differently at home. And we're going to ask the final question.
Please.
What is, and this is why I'm cheating with this one. What is the most popular social media platform for Gen Zers? See, I let millennials off the hook finally.
Again, I would have to ask which Gen Zers?
American Gen Zers. Now it's not loaded specific. There you go.
With American Gen Zers, do we consider YouTube to be a social media?
Yes.
I would be somewhere between YouTube and Facebook.
No.
Great.
I will accept YouTube because we all use YouTube, but the true answer is TikTok. This is still the Reynolds Hot Box Podcast, a local podcast about local media and the future of journalism. I'm still Tamir Drojaye. I'm still here with Ezekiel Coring. What would you say the word journalism means to you?
Journalism is well, obviously, it's a profession. It's an art. There's a lot of ways we can describe it. Particularly for me and for the role I have seen journalism play out in Venezuela in the last 10 years, I would say it is a way of allowing people to make more informed decisions.
That's a very interesting answer from our guest, Dr. Ezekiel Coring. But I also wonder, a lot of people complain about fake news nowadays. How can you trust that, you know, you're being more informed?
Well, fake news have existed always. We can go back in time and look at early periodicals, and fake news have existed always. Let's begin by that. It is not a new phenomenon. It is not a new phenomenon caused by social media. The possibilities that digital media and particularly, you know, and that's why we have such an issue with fake news nowadays, is precisely because one of the things that social media does, it levels the playing ground in terms of being able to produce media very much like a large corporation would be able to produce it, you know. But if we talk about economic or political interests, you know, there's examples. I can think of one, the Brass Check by Upton Sinclair, study in the early 1900s about the way that, and certainly it has its own problems, but in the way that newspaper editors would concert certain news. How can you trust that you're being told the truth? Well, you know, there's many ways in which we can, and one of the issues, and that is part of what I do in terms of research and in terms of scholarly production, is precisely in terms of media literacy. One of the biggest problems that we have in nowadays is the fact that people use media and they're not used to knowing how to use it. They're not critical readers. To give you an example, you will see a picture tweeted. We were talking about Twitter before.
Yeah.
You'll see a picture tweeted about, I don't know, a protest in Bogota, as they happened just a few days ago.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, no, that's preposterous. Let me retweet it. You didn't even take the time to verify whether that image, when was it published? And again, you know, in the Venezuelan case, we actually had an entire citizen movement in terms of fact-checking before we were even talking about fake news. Because simply you understand that when information is not verified,
right? it does become a problem.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We've got other segments coming your way. You're still on the Reynold Hotbox podcast, a podcast about local media. Local is very important. Local media is the future of journalism and media. This is still the Reynolds Hotbox podcast, the podcast about local media and the future of journalism. I'm still your host, Temiloluwa Adrojaye. Still here with Dr. Ezekiel Corin. And I want to ask, what is one thing you would say is your claim to fame?
Well, definitely not saying I'm a professor. That is seldom the scene as a claim to fame.
Okay.
I don't know. I think it's yet to come.
Why? I was hoping to hear I nearly became a professional soccer at 15, but I'll take this one. Why?
No, that happened when I was 13.
Ooh.
Yeah, I played soccer for a lot of years. I really wouldn't know what to put my finger on.
You already know what it is. It's still the Reynolds Hotbox podcast. I'm still your host, Tami Drojaye. I'm still here with Dr. Ezekiel Corin. He's going to leave in 30 minutes, and I'm going to be mad because I wish we definitely had more time. We could do this the whole day. But we're now in the time travel segment, and describe the perfect future for yourself 10, 20 years down the line.
The perfect future.
10 years down the line, yeah.
If I have to be completely honest, I would like to be able to go back to Venezuela.
Wow.
Unfortunately, I do not see that happening, not even 10 years.
You're still on Reynolds Hotbox podcast, a local podcast about local media and the future of journalism. I'm Tami Drojaye. I still have here with me Ezekiel Corin. What's the most random fact about yourself? This is the random fact segment. I was going to say it would be becoming a professional footballer, but that didn't happen, obviously.
No. Let's see. Most random fact. I have never been able to play a musical instrument. I am musically challenged.
Even like the recorder?
No. I mean, trust me, I knock on doors and it's out of tune. Now, you want another random fact that you will really not believe?
Okay.
I am extremely good at math, so much so that actually when I went into college, I did not go in for journalism. I actually went in for computer engineering.
How do you get into journalism?
Things happen.
Okay, so that's the second random fact we share.
Yeah, huh. I fell in love with, I really fell in love with the whole issue of communication as a human phenomenon.
I'm not, yeah. That's interesting. That's very interesting. You're still on the Reynolds Hotbox podcast. It's a local podcast about local media and the future of journalism. That is, we're trying to discuss, if journalism will be around in 10 years or so. Fake news and all.
Oh, yeah.
This segment is the advice segment. What's the one advice you have for journalists who are graduating this year, next year, whenever?
Understand what your role is in society and really look at examples of the kind of work that you could be doing and don't simply limit yourselves to what is being done, but actually try to improve it. That is the only hope we have as a profession.
And moving forward on the Reynolds Hotbox podcast, the podcast about local media and the future of journalism, here with Dr. Ezekiel Corin. So, final segment. How did you feel about being on the Reynolds Hotbox podcast?
Oh, I love it. I mean, I wish we could do this again.
I agree. Oh, my goodness. Yes. Would you say you liked the experience?
Absolutely. I mean, I think, first of all, I want to congratulate you because I think that this initiative is tremendously valuable, both for us as academics as well as for the school as a site of knowledge creation. So that on one hand. And on the other hand, I really feel that, God, I feel you drained my brain.
Well, that's a wonderful compliment. Thank you so much. This has been the Reynolds Hotbox podcast, the podcast about local media and the future of journalism. I officially have the title of Brain Drainer. and my name is Timmy Adrojaye, being here with Dr. Ezekiel Corin. thank you so much for coming. Appreciate it. I hope to have you here back soon. This has been the Reynolds Hotbox Podcast.